Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 5th of August, Anno Domini 2017, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. And before we do the news, a couple of quick points. Steve Ray is somewhere in the Midwest, one step ahead of the law. Hopefully, he'll show up before too long. And a big shout out to our friend Rob Linton, who's manning or at least personing the booth at the Park Avenue Festival. And Rob, this is an important note to remember: today is National Underwear Day, where people all over the country wander around in nothing but their underwear.
Well, he kept threatening to go around in his Jazz 90.1 Speedo.
There you go. That would work.
That'll scare a lot of Park Ave folks.
How much will it cost you to put the pants on?
Please donate, folks. Get his pants back on.
That's right. All right, to the...
Oh, that would be... how to ruin your vision.
all right, here's the news. It's a fact of modern life that many of us forget. The phones, the computers, the other connected devices we depend on can often be used against us as secret listening devices. On Tuesday, attention turned to the Amazon Echo with a demonstration that showed how hackers can convert some models into devices that surreptitiously record our most intimate moments. To be clear, and I want you to pay attention to this, the hack only works against older models of the Amazon Echo only. So, A, it has to be an Amazon Echo, not the Dot or the Google Home, and it cannot be the newer models, just the original 20, I think it's 15 models. It also requires physical access to the device by a hacker with above average skills in Linux and embedded hardware systems. That means people aren't likely to be exposed to such attacks unless they own a 2015 or 2016 device and are a target of interest to the CIA or a similar nationally sponsored spy group or an advanced corporate espionage operation or a highly determined stalker, I suppose. But so-called evil-made attacks, they're named that because they're carried out often by a house cleaner or other person who has brief access to a target's devices, are valid hacks. Microsoft, Apple, and other manufacturers include them in their threat modeling. And now, following a proof-of-concept hack by MWR Labs security researcher Mark Barnes, those types of threats are a reality millions of Echo users must consider as well. This highlights privacy concerns people have always have about always-listening devices, Barnes said. It shows the need for developers to have security assessments of smart devices they develop and for organizations to gain assurance of the security posture of any products they purchase before installing them. Barnes's hack works by gaining root access to a vulnerable Echo and applying and adding commands that surreptitiously capture the raw microphone input and send it to an attacker-controlled computer. Other commands can steal authentication tokens used to access Amazon or potentially other services. The technique doesn't affect the normal function of the Echo and can't be detected without inspecting the network traffic sent by the device. Okay. To carry out the hack, Barnes removed the device. Now, see, this is how hard it is. To carry out the attack, Barnes removed the device's rubber base and exposed 18 pads that Amazon engineers rely on to perform various diagnostics. A previously published research paper already showed how to use an attached SD card to load a generic version of Linux onto the device. Barnes used the paper as a starting point for booting into the actual Echo firmware. From there, he installed a persistent implant, gained remote root shell access, and ultimately monitor the input captured by the microphone, but it did take him a while. Barnes said the process from start to finish takes about 2 hours. But with additional work, he could develop a ready-made device that could be pushed onto the pads that would require only a few minutes to install. Neither technique will work on 2017 models because Amazon's engineers introduced a mitigation that joins two of the crucial debugging pads in a way that prevents external booting. The technique also doesn't work on the Amazon Dot. Barnes said he has some ideas on ways he could root the latest models, but he has not yet had time to test them. Folks who are concerned about the security of their devices can check the manufacturer year by inspecting the original package. If the copyright shows the year 2017 and a model number ending in 02, it is not vulnerable. Echo users can also mute their devices at any time simply by pushing a physical button. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is the Amazon Echo can be hacked. And your choices are unlikely to happen to me, I have a Dot, so no worries, Google Home all the way, baby, I think I need a longer string for my tin cans. And of course, as we all know our users so well, about 81% of you so far have voted for, I think I need a longer string for my tin cans. But I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right under Please Help, under Fascinating Stuff, the second choice down is the first choice down is the forums. The second forum in is the poll discussion. And so far, at least, the first poll discussion is 5 August 17, oh, for Pete's sake, 5 August 17, the Amazon Echo can be hacked. So far, we've got three people who have put something in there, and you can certainly join the party there. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. I have an Amazon Echo Dot, so I am not vulnerable. I also have a Google Home, which I use much more frequently than the Echo. Both of them are very useful devices. But you have to understand that they are always on, always listening devices, just the way cameras are always watching and... Mm-hmm. And desktop microphones are always listening.
Yeah, and folks forget it. Geez.
You know, they get going and they leave it on and they get very complacent, you know, and they don't think twice. And after setting it up, you know, they get doing other things than that. And, oh, yeah, that's right.
So far, this is a very difficult hack to do. It takes 2 hours. It takes somebody with physical access taking a thing apart. But it is still a proof of concept, and it means it is doable, at least with the older version of the product. The newer versions do not seem to have at least that vulnerability. Yeah, but you're right. Every device is vulnerable.
Yeah, and for them to really want to hack it, you got to be somebody important or something, or, you know, to take the time and effort.
Right.
The average person, yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
Right.
Sorry to say, folks, but, you know, there's no interest in that.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is our friend Carl from Pottstown, PA. How are things down there?
Oh, pretty good. How are things with you?
Peachy.
Good. I have a question about using a cell phone in my car. Normally when I use a cell phone, I use it in the typical way. I hold it up to my head and I talk into it. But for driving, my car is a 2008 car and it doesn't have any technology built in for anything like that. I want to set up a system in my car where I could talk on the cell phone, have both hands on the steering wheel, hear the audio either in a Bluetooth earpiece or through the car audio system. And by the way, the car audio system does have an auxiliary input jack. Or and be able to talk without holding something, maybe put a microphone somewhere so I could keep both hands on the steering wheel. Could you make a suggestion what product I could buy in order to do that?
Well, I use a product from a company called VTIN, V-T-I-N. And they make all kinds of Bluetooth products.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the products that they make is a Bluetooth car headphone speaker thing. I'm trying to type it in. Car Bluetooth. I don't know where I'm looking at. I got it from Amazon. It was, there it is, the Amazon V10 Bluetooth 4.0 hands-free car kit stereo adapter music receiver with ground loop noise isolator 3.5 millimeter aux jack Siri activation.
That's a mouthful.
And it's $30 if you're a Prime customer. $40, $45 if you're not. And basically, it one end plugs into the aux jack. There's three connectors, right? One plugs into the aux jack. One plugs into what used to be the cigarette lighter, and is now the auxiliary power device, the auxiliary device power source. And the other is this little hockey puck thing, much smaller than a hockey puck, but it's that shape that. That glues to the dashboard, and you can tap it to make a call that wakes it up. It works like, now it works just like a Bluetooth headpiece, right? If you want to make a call on a Bluetooth headpiece, you tap it and then say call such and so. Well, in this thing, you tap it and you do all the same stuff. I mean, it is Bluetooth, and like I said, it costs me. I'm a Prime member, so it costs me $30. Plugs into the cigarette lighter, and I'm done. It's right there. It's easy.
Okay, I'll look it up.
VTIN Bluetooth 4.0 hands-free car kit. I suppose that's all you really need.
Mm-hmm.
And it works like a charm. I had another one that I bought last year, 2 years ago, and it died in the winter. It didn't like the cold. This one has lasted with no problem.
Okay. And the other thing I'm worried about is the road noise. You know, for the other person to be able to understand what I'm saying over the road noise, is it filtered in any way to eliminate that?
Well, it does have a ground loop noise isolator, so...
Yeah, you still might want to roll up the windows.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And turn off the radio. But I do that. I talk to people all the time, and some of them have worse hearing than I do, and they don't seem to have a problem understanding me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll give that a try. I'll look it up. Thanks a lot, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, okay. Have fun. Yeah, we're all supposed to, of course, not use our phones in the car, but sometimes we have business that we have to get done.
Talking on it has gotten to where folks can do things, like even in my car, I've got the hands-free. You know, and I can answer, and I don't even have to take my hands off the steering wheel. I can sit there, hit a button, and it answers it, and it comes over this. It mutes the radio, and it comes over this the stereo. So, you know, I can still, you know, not take my eyes off the road or anything else. What really gets folks, and folks are finding this out. I saw somebody got fined $850 for texting while driving, and got caught. And it's like, yeah, good, because that's the most distractive thing right now. Because, I drive now daily for a living, and I see more folks looking down at their phones and texting while they're driving. You know, they're doing it one-handed. A lot of these younger folks are that. And it's like scary as all heck, because they all of a sudden start drifting from side to side. And, you know, I've seen others go through an intersection. Because they're not paying attention, the light had changed, and other cars are beeping and honking at them and everything else, because, you know, it's crazy. And that's where a lot of insurance companies now, they're not so much because, you know, talking hands-free is one thing. But if they see that you were texting at any time during an accident,
right,
you might have some issues there, kiddo.
Right. Now, I sent a text just today. Through my watch while I was driving.
Yep.
Never took my eyes off the road and was
that
able
is
to
so
do that.
Cool.
Isn't that the coolest
I
thing?
I love it.
Dave recently just got the, just this week, in fact, got the same watch that I've got. It's a great watch. Oh. And the things I love most about it are if somebody calls, I can look at my watch and see who it is and either accept or reject the call right from there. Now, this particular model isn't a phone in and of itself, doesn't have a cell
Yeah, no, thing. I don't want it for that.
Right, it Bluetooth. Now, who wants to pay Verizon even more money?
Yeah, no.
It Bluetooths to my phone, so it's a very nice thing. We're going to take a quick break.
We'll talk more about it.
Yeah, we will. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, possibly Steve Ray, me and Francesco and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
What we failed to tell folks was we both now have the LG G-Watch.
Right.
And it's great because, you know, I was doing a lot of homework, like I was telling my wife. I had been looking at different watches for quite a while, even since when you got yours. I was from time to time looking at it, and I got sidetracked on some other projects and that, but got back into it, and I started looking at some of these other watches and that, and you can put memory cards in them, and like you said, you can put this the other SIM card in there that you can make it then another phone. Again, you're paying for your Verizon or AT&T or whoever your carrier is, then now have that phone on your plan. And that's not what I wanted. I wanted something that would connect to my phone and still pull up like my calendar, my contacts. Like you said, it's great because I've got the Google Pixel phone, and it ties to that seamlessly as far as throwing out the commands, you know, checking this or doing this, and it pops up right on the screen. Again, I wound up driving along and sent a text to my wife. Right over the phone, without me taking my hands off. It was just like I was talking to somebody else in the car. And it just automatically, okay, sending. And it can check your calendar. I mean, it does a lot.
Does a lot.
And you can get other features for that. I was starting to look at other clock faces and the whole nine yards. But at first, trying to settle in just the updates. The number of updates that it's done in the past week. It seems like every day it's been doing some updates to better improve, because probably when you came out, you had yours first. It had version 1.5 of the what they call the Android Wear, and now they were up to 2.0.
Right.
And they're constantly, like Android though, they're constantly improving it, making adjustments and everything else, and because the biggest complaint at first was battery life. But you learn to turn different features in that on and off, and settles right down, and now I'm getting a good 2 days easily out of a charge.
And I charged this up Wednesday night, and I currently still have 47% of the battery life left.
Let's see, I'm sitting at right now, yeah, still at 91%, and I've had it on since 7 o'clock this morning.
Yep. They last a reasonable amount of time, particularly considering how small the battery is in that thing.
Yeah, and, you know, what folks were complaining about, and, again, they didn't do their homework, they were turning on so many features. Like, the fitness, it's you can have it check your steps and everything else. You know, it won't do heart rate, but it'll keep track of your steps and everything. Yeah, no, I don't need it for that. So they give you a lot of flexibility of turning things on and off and that type of stuff. So, you know, but it's great that you can tie it to making a phone call or anything else right from your wrist. And I believe, you know, if you put your phone on the speaker, like I've got one of those, what do they call them, NATOs, N-A-T-O devices. And what it is it sits right on the dash and it's magnetic. So on the back of my phone, I have this little disc. And all I have to do is set the phone right up, right near it, and boom, it's a magnet, and it holds it right there. And I love it for the GPS, because I use Waze every day. And it gives you street by street. But through that, I can also have it do other things.
Yep. Yeah, it's a pretty amazing thing. You'll discover, at least I've been using Google Maps, and I think Waze does the same thing. Take a look at your phone sometime, and at the bottom it'll show you where when your next turn is.
Yeah, Waze does the same
thing. Yeah, it's very cool. It's very cool.
I've done both, but you know what? The only advantage, I love Waze over Google Maps. Google Maps is just, yeah, that a mapping. But Waze, I have found, will give you, it's up to date. Yeah, I mean, as far as traffic conditions, folks. So, like last night, I was out finishing up work, and I had to go to the other side of the city. And it showed me going out towards, Chilai, that there was a 12-minute backup in traffic. I thought, okay, so I got off, wound up going off, Lyle Avenue and going out that way. So you save a lot of time. It'll let you know where accidents are and everything else. So it's a social, I should say,
people voluntarily either actually report something or, I guess, let Waze report it for them. It's W-A-Y-Z. It's a Google product. And it's essentially crowdsourced real-time traffic information.
Yeah.
Very, very powerful, very cool. As long as you're in an area where there are other people, you know, who would be using Waze. But it's a very cool product.
Yeah. Well, we used it all the way coming back from Arizona. And that was nice because we'd wanted to stop, swing off and see a Harley dealership.
Sure.
So that was no big thing. We just typed it in. And it said, all right, well, you get off at this route, do. Okay. Then once we were done with the dealership, we said, all right, get us back to the route that we were on. And it would take us through all these side streets, right back to an on-ramp. And this was in every state that we went through. Every state. It worked flawlessly. And even get me through Dallas. I mean, that was tricky because I did miss one turn. I wasn't going anywhere, so I was just trying to get through Dallas, and there was a ramp, and they were so close together. They were literally maybe 10 feet apart, the exit ramps, and I took the wrong one. No problem. I recalculated, turn here, turn there, and boom, right back on.
Yep, it's a very cool product.
Yeah.
All right, here's our next news item. A startup company is trying to turbocharge a type of battery. It's been a mainstay for simple devices like flashlights and toys, but until now has been ignored as an energy source for computers and electric cars. Executives at Ionic Materials in Woburn, Massachusetts, plan to announced on Thursday, a design breakthrough that could make solid-state alkaline batteries a viable alternative to lithium-ion and other high-energy storage technologies. Alkaline batteries can be made far more cheaply and safely than today's lithium-ion batteries, but they are not rechargeable. The issue, along with the superior power of lithium-ion batteries, has meant that the alkaline batteries are not used in personal computers, smartphones, or other electric vehicles. Ionic could change that equation with an alkaline battery. The company said it could be recharged hundreds of times, which is not quite the 5,000 times of an lithium-ion battery, but it's a pretty good start. One additional benefit of the company's breakthrough, an alkaline battery would not be as prone to the combustion issues that have plagued lithium-ion batteries in a range of products, most notably among Samsung smartphones. Cheaper and more powerful batteries are also considered by many to be the driver needed to make the cost of renewable energy technologies like wind and solar competitive with coal, gas, and nuclear power that support the national energy grid. Ionic said it had developed prototypes of a rechargeable alkaline battery that can be made using continuous manufacturing processes similar to the making of plastic wrap. So far, the company, which is backed by William Joy, a pioneering Silicon Valley computer designer, has demonstrated up to 400 charge recycles for its prototypes. Ionic executives said they believe they will be able to triple that. So right now, 400 charges, eventually 1,200 charges on a single battery. Not bad. The alkaline batteries would be initially heavier than today's lithium-ion batteries, according to Mike Zimmerman, who's a material scientist, who is the founder and chief executive of Ionic. But the new batteries would more than compensate for that handicap with their cost advantage and, in time, their ability to store more energy. There are more advantages besides coal, cost and safety. Lithium-ion batteries rely on cobalt, and using that element comes with a human cost. cobalt mines in Africa, for example, have been accused of using child labor while leaving behind a toxic mess. Alkaline batteries, on the other hand, are manufactured in a different way entirely, and much easier. They use relatively abundant amounts of zinc and manganese, which are relatively abundant compared to cobalt,
mm-hmm.
and are mined in lots of places where there are very few problems with child labor and things like that. The company had made progress toward an alkaline battery design that would replace zinc with more affordable aluminum. In the past, aluminum has not been usable because of issues like corrosion. Alkaline batteries based on aluminum would potentially weigh less than lithium-ion batteries and would be even cheaper to produce than today's alkaline design. So, would you sacrifice weight for safety? Give us a call, 585-966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
See, I think most folks, you know, they're not worried about that. You know, I mean, they want longer life. Bottom line, you know, batteries, it's always been a complaint on, you know, cell phones and everything else. You know, batteries for cameras, and they don't last long enough. And, you know, till they find another product that they can make batteries out of that will last a lot, you know, like three times longer.
Right.
You know, I mean, this is just another substitute for the existing batteries that are there now. And trying to, you know, maybe get a little bit more time and, you know, a little bit cheaper. But like you say, they're not chargeable. They're not rechargeable. So
we always used to say that the main difference between technology in Star Trek and technology in the real world, aside from the magic like transporters and phaser beams, the real difference is that nothing on the Enterprise needed a battery.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you never saw anybody like plug in their communicator.
Oh, darn, yeah. Or as they're working on the key, you know, the consoles. Oh, shoot, the AA batteries went in this keyboard. Get me another pair.
Yep. That's really the big difference. Now, my watch, on the other hand, is down to 34%. I didn't get a chance to charge it last night. And so it's running out of battery. It's enough to get me through
today.
Until I get home, at least, if not the rest of the day, because I'm not really doing anything with it at the moment. But, you know, it's a concern. It's the reason people don't buy electric cars more often. Mm-hmm. We know that electric cars are much cheaper to run, But you're not going to go across country with it. If I were to buy an electric car, puttering around town would be cheap and reliable and fast, and it goes 0 to 60 in a few seconds, and it's great. Except that if you want to go on a trip, once you run out of your 100 or 200 or 300 mile range, you've now got hours to wait for it to charge up.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
No. It's like, but the other cars that, you know, you can do both battery and, you know, has an engine.
The hybrid.
Yeah, the hybrids are fantastic, and those are cool. I know a few folks that have them. They're great for when they're in city and that, and go low. It goes over to the, you know, the battery part. But getting them repaired, boy, that can be expensive.
Well, exactly, because they're so new and so different. One of the things that they say keeps people from buying electric cars is range anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how far can I go?
Yeah.
And certainly for some people, if all you ever do is putter around town, you're fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you're the sort of person who takes extended trips, you're really not going to do that in an electric
vehicle. Ones that scare me, you know, technology-wise, they're electric cars, and they look like a little roller skate.
Oh, you know, smart cars.
A pregnant roller skate is what I think of.
Yep.
They get two people in it. I swear, you know, if you were in an accident, they just sort of put a big, you know, paper bag around it and just bury you in that, because getting you out from the car, there's no side, you know, sides to it. There's nothing in the front and the rear. You're hosed to begin with.
On the other hand, there's one called the 4-2. which is that two-seater one you like.
Yeah.
5 stars on safety rating.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, 5 stars. Because it's got a steel race car-style frame.
Oh, okay. So if it rolls or anything else, it's
And pretty much every single space on it is a front or a side airbag of some sort. So,
what was it? That one movie?
Sylvester Stallone.
Yes, Sylvester Stallone was in it. Yeah, and the car goes off into this fountain.
Oh, Wesley Snipes. Yeah.
And all this foam fills up the car. So, what the heck is it? But it's a good idea. You know,
right. Conceptually, except you could probably suffocate in there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You suffocate.
Yeah. But yeah, the big thing with smart cars is if it's your second car, right? You're all right. But if it's your first car, you can't take long trips to them. All right. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright. And hey, we're going to have a surprise guest, Mina Francesco and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Yay! And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Yes, Steve Ray, ladies and gentlemen, he was one step ahead of law in the Midwest. Then they caught up with him.
Actually, there was a cop next to me.
Okay.
490 is a parking lot from 590 to downtown. Stay away. Stay a long way away.
Yeah.
So that five-minute ride took me 45 minutes to get off at Culver, turn around, and come up 590.
Amazing. And so we now have the YouTube stream is up or coming up, one of the two. So you should be able to join us there as well. And of course, you're listening to us, so you clearly found out we're either on the air or on the Jazz 90.1 stream. Also, the Jazz 90.1 app. So there's about a billion ways to listen to us. You can listen to us while we talk to Andy from Rochester, New York. What's up, Andy?
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
Oh, it's Andy from Greece, New York.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, the post office still thinks it's Rochester, so you were right.
Yeah.
Two questions today. First one's about Facebook in general. My daughter-in-law sends me pictures. I'm on her feed, and I get pictures of my grandkids, and you know how much I like pictures of my grandkids.
Yes.
About a week ago, all of a sudden, I don't get any feeds from her. And I asked, and she said she's changed nothing. She hasn't unfollowed me. She hasn't unfriended me. But my wife is getting these pictures, but I'm not. And when I mentioned it to her, she said, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that because my son posts stuff, and she doesn't get it either. I'll get it. My wife gets it, but she doesn't get it. She has to go back and say specifically, you know, share it with me so that she gets it.
Right.
Now, she'll post something like she's interested in going to some event someplace, and I'll get that, but I don't get her pictures of my grandkids, which is what I'm there for.
Right.
Any ideas? I mean, I've looked at all my settings. It's following her. Her stuff goes right to the top of my my timeline. She says she hasn't unfriended me or unfollowed me or anything. Any ideas?
The only thing I can suggest is that you unfriend her and then refriend her and see if that fixes it.
I've also seen issues where when you're looking at somebody's post, there's a little down arrow in the upper corner.
Yeah.
And you can choose that and say, see less of this person, see more of this person.
Mute
this person. So you may want to go back and find one of her posts and change that to see more. You may not have, you know, muted it, but maybe it thought so.
Well, and that's been a problem with Facebook from day one. And it randomly, it does the same thing to me. It randomly decides who I really meant to follow and who I really just wanted to I was just being polite about.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's decided to help you, whether you want it or not.
Yes, exactly right.
Okay, well, I'll try the unfriending and refunding and see if that works.
Yes, it's the only thing I can suggest.
Okay, well, hey, it's a start.
Yep.
Second question, how goes your battle with Google?
Not well. Haven't heard back. Those of you who follow the Security Tango may have noticed that some people are getting a notice that it's been blocked by Google because it serves malware. It does not. And in fact, the original notice I got was a notice for my thank you page. I have a donate button on my site, and if you do donate, and some people are kind enough to do so, when it comes back, there's a page that essentially just says, thanks for donating. It's really important to us, yada, yada, yada. That's the initial page they flagged as carrying malware.
And it may have been one of their ads that was infected.
Right, and here's the problem. At the same time that they blacklisted me, they were having a problem serving bad ads, and they fixed it. And we know that, and they know that. But during that time, I got caught somehow serving bad ads, in quotes, because serving bad software because the ad was doing it that came from Google. So we've begun attempting to discuss how to get me off the blacklist, but it has not gone quickly. Google is very fast to put people on a blacklist, very, very slow to take them off.
Which you can kind of understand because you don't want to put the bad guys back on the whitelist that fast.
Right. But, no, I'm not saying I don't understand it. I just don't like it.
And when it's your site that they've accidentally marked, it's terrible. I've seen cases in the past where Roadrunner gets marked as a spam, and they block the entire rr.com domain. So what is that? 10 million people?
Yep.
Suddenly cannot send email. Because one customer using Roadrunner did send spam, so the automatic spam bot filters marked the entire Roadrunner domain as spam.
Then, and that also happens when people have their web server on a shared server with a host, and people are all sharing one IP address.
Yep.
It happened to me often enough that I eventually just bought my own IP address and the heck with them.
Yeah.
I can't do that anymore. It's unlikely to be anything you actually did, Andy, although the suggestions were good, but you never know.
Okay, well, I did try it, I think, yesterday, and I can get to it if I just did drill down far enough into the red screen and say, go there anyway, and I know this is a safe site, let me go there anyhow.
Yeah.
And it will let me eventually get there. But for somebody who's not real comfortable with their computer and they're trying to get to the Security Tango to do the downloads to get the software installed so they can get rid of whatever they think might be on their computer, if they're not comfortable, it's going to be a slow slog for them.
Yep. I'm hoping to get it done quickly. I'm not sanguine about that idea. I don't think it's going to be quick, but I'm trying.
Okay. Well, best of luck on that.
Thanks.
And we'll keep listening.
Yep. Have fun.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Now, this is a Safari warning, not a Google warning.
So yeah, but I'm on a list somewhere.
Right, yeah, whatever list Safari is checking is they checked it once, and that was enough. They didn't check it twice.
That's about right. So, yeah, and the page that they listed, like I said, is my thank you page, which literally is nothing but the words thank you and a little bit more verbiage, and then the ads. So it's got to be the ads. It's certainly, you know, I've looked at my site. There's nothing new or different or changed. Or,
it's probable there was one infected ad, because that's how a lot of the infections work these days, is they come through an ad that Google served you because you're using Google Ads.
Yep, that's exactly right. That is exactly right.
And they're
right.
Blocking one that they marked that was going through their system.
Which is probably already long removed.
And and you're just one of the little strings they haven't cleaned up yet.
Yep. And theoretically, it's as easy as calling them and finding somebody who will actually verify that my site is clean again.
Yeah, but good luck on that.
Yeah, right. Right, right. That's been my problem. So we'll figure it out. They have lots of phone numbers if you want to buy products. They have lots of phone numbers if you want to buy Chromebooks. Not a lot of phone numbers to block your address. But we'll get there. We'll see what happens.
But they should. You know, I mean, that company is getting so big. And even, you know.
Well, they've got that power to blacklist you.
Yeah, but the thing of it is, though, is, you know, they got to also realize that they're, you know, even they are human and they could make mistakes.
Right. That's exactly right.
And they need a number that you can call or something to get response back because they are getting so big and that could tick people off, especially, you know, when you got something and it is legit and you were using their product, you know, and the ad came through them. And they blacklisted it, and so now because you had it on yours, you're getting blacklisted also.
Right.
And, yeah.
That's why I went and got myself a dedicated IP address.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really need one.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, since I got blocked twice, and it's all my sites. It's Soundbites and Security Tango and Ask Nick and everything else are all on the same server, essentially. So when somebody on that server got blocked,
we got blocked.
So now I have a dedicated IP address. So even though I'm sharing the server,
The IP address
makes the internet think I'm a separate box.
Entity.
So if they get blocked, I don't get blocked.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the good thing. It's a pain in the patoot, quite honestly. But I understand that, you know, Google is doing the best they can, and every once in a while they catch something, and oh well, you know, what are you going to say?
Yeah, it happens.
It happens. They're human too. So, we're in the process of trying to resolve that. In the meantime, don't get a virus.
Well, and
problem solved. There we go.
In general, don't believe any message that pops up on your computer.
Yeah.
Well, that's right.
Probably lying.
Yeah. Most of them know. Right. That
especially if it doesn't come from the program you already own, but the bad guys are using the big names like Norton and McAfee and you know Microsoft and Apple and saying, you're infected, call this phone number.
Yeah.
No,
and
you're
especially
not.
When they sit there and say, well, if you don't, then we're going to erase your machine. I'm sorry, unless you gave them permission to get into your machine, they can't. They prey on folks that don't know much about computers and figure, you know, and do the intimidation and figuring that, oh, they, you know, I can sucker these folks in, and that's just what they do. They sucker you in to believe that, you know, if you don't, they're going to wipe out everything that's on you. And, you know, you're thinking, oh, God forbid I lose everything on my machine because, you know, that's so important to me. That's my daily life now. But you don't have to worry about that. If they tell you that, say, go ahead. I didn't give you permission to come into the machine anyway, so
right. You
can try all you want or threaten all you want. That's the best thing is when you can go back to them and, you know, use their reverse psychology on it.
We had a customer this week that got tricked with fake QuickBooks support. They were having problems with QuickBooks. So she thought she called into it. And I'm thinking the bad guys are smart. Usually when we see these scams, you know, they want to charge people $300 for a service contract.
Right.
Which makes it weaselly and not illegal anymore. You're not paying for a service, you're paying for a contract.
Right.
So it's harder to dispute with your credit card. So she called in for QuickBooks, which is business. They wanted to charge her $800 for a service contract and $300 for a new version of QuickBooks. And she said, well, I can get QuickBooks for $200. And I say, oh, okay, $700 for the contract, and we'll throw in a copy of QuickBooks.
Wow.
No, I think I'll call my regular vendor.
Yeah, good.
And then when I scanned her machine, 2,500 tracking cookies and malware objects.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not uncommon. I had one, what was it, $68.99.
Mm-hmm.
Cookies and that type on a machine, then they wonder why it's running slow.
Yeah. Somewhere along the way, our counters reset, because I remember getting 100,000 or more malware objects in the early days.
The early days. Oh, yeah.
Now a couple thousand is common.
It probably rolls over at 65 million.
Well, the thing that is, though, is no, they've...
Yeah, we only used a 32-bit register for our virus counter.
there's various forms of spyware and malware, but you know, they're just using different variants.
Yeah.
And they're easy to catch, so that's why I think the numbers are being reduced, because super anti-spyware and malware bites are catching them sooner, even though it may be a different name. You know, these script kiddies, they just sit there and rename it so they can put it out there as theirs, and it's the same thing, you know, as far as code-wise and everything else, and super anti-spyware just quick picks it up and gets
and even, even the regular ads that aren't malicious are often lying. You know, is your computer running slow? Download our software. Everyone thinks their computer's running slow, and the software will not do anything except nag you, tell you there's horrible problems, and want you to spend money on something that doesn't do anything.
All right, that music tells me you've survived an entire hour of this nonsense. But don't go away. We've got a whole other hour coming along. It'll be Dave Enright. It'll be Steve Ray, possibly for the whole hour this time. Me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites. Don't go away. There's a whole lot more to come, and so we'll just see you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this version, or I should say the last hour of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And Nick will be joining us in just a couple of moments. But for the folks that didn't catch it, I had one caller call in and ask, the app that we were talking about is called Waze.
I posted it, too.
Yeah, and it's posted there. And what Waze is basically it's a, it's like Google Maps and that, but it's, excuse me. It's a social mapping program, have you. I mean, it's great in showing you the directions. It'll sit there, and, or sit there. It'll show you, you know, turn by turn, you know, and it'll speak to you, telling you, all right, that it's coming up, say, 1,000 feet and everything else. But what I like about it is if there's traffic jams and accidents and whatever, you know, police are that, it's there. And people report it. And when traffic is backing up, like yesterday with all the heavy rain, I was headed on out towards Elm Grove. And passing through the city, I noticed Waze was telling me, yeah, it's going to get backed up about 12 minutes if you go this route. So I pulled off and I wound up going another route, thus eliminating, you know, waiting in line, this traffic jam for over 12 minutes. So unlike Google Maps, this is more live in letting you know current conditions and everything else, what's happening. It's a more of a social mapping program, have you? So, but I've used it, and I've been using it now, I think, for about 3 or 4 years. And now with my current job, I use it every day, Monday through Fridays, getting around some of these areas. It knows some pretty good tricks, too, about getting you around. Oh, I didn't know it. That was, yeah, you so could go that way.
That's what I was mentioning earlier, that I got to start using the GPS when, even when I know where I'm going, because it would have warned me about the traffic jam on 490, and I could have skipped it.
Yeah, that's what I say. Waze would tell you, you'd see this red mark on the highway, and it'll tell you an estimated 12 minutes, 15 minutes to get through that section.
Right. Google Maps does the same thing, but it's not quite as real time.
Yeah.
It's a few minutes delayed. When I used to drive to Rockford, Illinois to see my daughter, I would put the thing on and have it running the whole way. And my wife would always say, and of course we had unlimited data, so She would say, "Why are you bothering? You know, it's just Route 90." She says, "I said no, now watch what happens when we get to Chicago." And it would take us a different route every time because congestions and slowdowns and accidents and everything else. And so we avoided a lot of that.
All right, here's just to let you know as far as the data use. All right, I use it for a whole month. And that's using it, folks, Monday through Friday. And I use it the whole day. Now, so I went through the whole month from, say, 7 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock at night. I'm using it constantly. I used, on my data plan, maybe a gig and three quarters. So it does not eat up a lot of your data, just
no,
so
doesn't.
You know. It does not consume, you know, because I thought, oh, maybe I'm going to have to get you, you know, buy more data. No, I, you know, I'm on a 6 gig plan, and I say it was a little over a gig and three quarters that it used up. And I, yeah, I can live with that, you know, because normally I have leftover data anyhow. So, yeah, I swear by that program. It's very helpful.
Right.
And when you do use it, if you get stuck in an accident that didn't know about yet, you can publish it to let the people behind you know, at least.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
And that's Waze, W-A-Z-E is the spelling. Mm-hmm. The one thing I do like about Google Maps is that they now have a feature that's when you go on, when you do it like at my desk, right? I'm sitting at my desk and I plan out a route that I'm going to take tomorrow. There's a button now that says download to phone.
Okay.
So you can download it and it puts the map on your phone. So you use no data at all because now it's got the map already and it's using GPS, which is not a cellular data thing.
Right.
And so it uses, well, certainly much less, although it may still use a little bit of your data to do things like the real-time
one of the stuff. Good thing, though, about the Google Maps that I will say for folks that want to use that is when you have the Google Maps up and you put in your 2 points, you know, it will show you alternative routes.
Yep.
It will suggest this route, that route, and this route. Now, if you're unfamiliar with it, it'll show you one route, usually the fastest. But if you just touch or put the mouse over one of the other routes that are usually in gray, click it there, it'll show you that route and the estimated time, how long it's going to take. So you can switch. Because for a while there, it's driving me nuts. I found it because I hadn't played much with the Google Maps. And it kept taking me on these screwy routes. I'm thinking, why is it going that way? I know where I got to go. What I didn't realize is up on the top of the map, you know, you can put car, bus, bicycle. Yeah.
Michael, avoid highways.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I had it on bicycle. So naturally, it's not going to put me on the expressway. Because I'm thinking, why would it have me go this route when I can hop on 590, go south, and it had me do... Then I quick left. Oh, shoot. I moved it over to car. Boom. It's changed.
Yep. A couple of times I'll be going somewhere, and this is the fastest route. It's 23 minutes. And the next one down, the slower route is 22 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do like the fact
that... technically, it's true. You know, it's a minute faster.
Right. Yeah. Right. I do like the fact that when you get in the car and you type in and you say, okay, let's go. The little voice comes up and says, "You are on the fastest route.
Yes.
You will reach your destination in 22 minutes.
Save so 2 minutes by taking this route."
Right, right. But it does give you a certain amount of affirmation, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You are on the fastest route. Thank you very much. I'm pleased and thrilled. Now, I have no sense of direction. None. Zero. None. I get lost in my own driveway. That's always been true of me. I don't know how the heck I got along before GPSs. I mean, I remember years ago I was doing dinner theater in Detroit, and the show closed, and the same company was doing the same show in St. Louis, and they wanted me to take over the role. I truly, literally just got in my car, got in my CB radio and said, hey, I'm going to St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going that way? And some trucker said, just stay behind me. Find me. I'm driving this. Yeah. I said, oh, you're three cars in front of me. He said, stay on my tail. I'll get you to St. Louis in 18 hours. Okay.
Back when they used to print out Google Maps.
Yeah.
Or you just
only
get
they called the AAA.
Yeah,
you get the old-fashioned trip tickets.
Yep.
You know, and well, when I was running my business, you know, full-time, I would sit there and have one of those map books.
Yep.
That I open it up, and I look at the coordinates for that street. You could look it up.
Yep.
And as long as, because I knew the city pretty well. I've been here all my life. But just sit there. Oh, okay. I know. As long as I can visually see where I got to go, what general area, then I can usually get it to that point and then go from there. But, I mean, you go to some areas, though, now, they change so much. It's, well, just this, well, year now, a year ago, just this past year, how College Town has grown. There by the U of R,
mm-hmm.
you know, that hotel was gone, and all of a sudden there's a Barnes & Noble. When did this all happen?
Yeah.
You know, but I hadn't been down that area in a couple years. And all of a sudden I go over there, and it's all built up. It's unreal. And you turn around now, and, you know, U of R is building constantly here and there all over the place. So
I'll tell you what's shocking. Just for the heck of it.
Shocking, I say.
I'm shocked. To find there's gambling in this establishment. I went down my old neighborhood, the street I grew up on as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
They painted my house, and it's the wrong color.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Did you talk to them about that?
I almost stormed up to the door in a huff, but it would have taken a minute and off, and I didn't have the time.
Oh, okay.
But it was...
Next time you get over there.
Exactly. I also noticed they cut down all the trees in the backyard. I used to spend every summer sitting in the cherry tree mm-hmm. with my friends, and we had a cherry tree, a peach tree, and a pear tree. And honestly, to this day, I can't eat pears anymore. I just can't do it. Cherries are kind of on that list, and peaches are close third. So you can tell which ones brought the most harvest in. But that was our... That was our fair for those days, and we spent many a year sitting in that cherry tree. I'll tell you that.
Before George Washington chopped it down?
Before George Washington chopped it down. They were oxbow cherries, big oxbow cherries. They were delicious. Holy crow, they were delicious. All right, let me read a news item here. We got time for that. Facebook, speaking of Facebook, is to step up its efforts to fight fake news by sending more suspected hoax stories to fact checkers and publishing their findings online. There's a job, fact checker for Facebook. There's going to be a lot of suicide watches on that. It follows mounting criticism of the social media firm for not doing enough to root out fake news on its platform. It has also just launched a new feature to four countries that will publish alternative news links beneath problematic articles, but several experts say the measures did not go far enough. Presenting audiences with context is helpful, but it does nothing to stop the spread of this material or to stop traffic going to fake news peddlers who are making money out of creating this material. The new related articles feature will post alternative news links beneath potentially fake stories. Facebook has trained me to ignore the links underneath the things because they're always, here's somebody you should have as a friend.
It ends up being
Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of which. Speaking of Justin Bieber, do you know who started following me on Twitter?
Who?
One Direction.
Interesting.
I don't know. I do not know. Anyway, Facebook has been criticized as being one of the main distribution points for fake news, which many think influenced the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Voters were also flooded with hoax stories during the French presidential election in May. Facebook has previously been reluctant to take down potentially fake news stories, arguing that it does not want to be an arbiter of truth. Instead, it identifies potentially fake stories through a mixture of artificial intelligence and user detection. Excuse me. These are then sent to independent fact checkers who place a flag next to hoax stories to alert readers. On Thursday, however, I've never seen a flag. I just may not have noticed it, I guess. On Thursday, however, the firm said it would start using updating machine learning to enhance detection, whatever that means. If an article has been reviewed by fact checkers, we may show the fact checking stories below the original post, added Sarah Sue, product manager of news feeds in a blog. A spokesrobot later clarified that these stories would not be direct responses to fake articles, but factual, accurate reports that offered an alternative. On Thursday, Facebook rolled out a new related articles feature in the U.S., France, Germany, and the Netherlands. The features, which Facebook has been testing since April, places links to other news coverage beneath highly popular or highly questionable stories, offering users more perspectives and additional information. People are saying if Facebook really wanted to stop fake news, it needed to back the news industry in a better way. Excuse me. If Facebook wants to help journalism, it needs to put its hand in its pocket and support quality, trusted news organizations to better reach audiences and advertisers. So how often have you been caught by fake news stories? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Google has been doing that on their news page for a while. You know, this article might be disputed. They will put up, especially on politics, they use PolitiFact as one of their fact checkers. The problem is people don't believe the fact checkers either. They believe what they want to believe.
People believe what they want to believe. People keep saying, oh, well, you saw it on Snopes. Snopes is extremely reliable news source.
Bob Barker is not dead.
Bob Barker is not dead. Let's get that settled right now. As of 11 o'clock last night, which is the last time I looked, Bob Barker is not dead. And if he was, you would see it on IMDb before you saw it on Twitter.
Yeah, probably even before CNN.
Exactly. So I, you know, don't, I'm so, and then my favorites are the ones like, oh my God, Bob Denver is dead. Yeah, for like 15 years.
Yeah.
Get over that. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco. And if you're on the line, please stay on the line. We'll get to you when we come back. If you're not on the line, why not? Give us a call. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And it's 23 minutes after the hour. We are sound bites, and we have Bob from Irondequoit on the line. Hi, Bob. What's up?
Hi. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I heard you talking about GPS systems, and I was wondering if there is a website or where I should go to get the software for the GPS system that I had bought from Magellan that I had lost all the software.
Probably Magellan.
Magellan. Okay, that's where I figured, but I will thought maybe there is another place I could go.
Occasionally we hear about people who have hacked the GPS boxes to make them do other things. But you usually want to get the software right from the company.
Okay. All right.
So Magellan actually has a software page. Steve is going to put up a link.
Okay.
And they have a software download page. You can download stuff for their GPSs and their mobile and their dash cams and their fitness. Everything has a category. So all you have to do is go to that one and
find the model of your device.
Right, okay. Right, right.
All right. That answers my question. Thank you, gentlemen. Yep.
There you go.
All right. Bye-bye.
Have fun.
And it's not a bad idea to update them now and then because roads change, new subdivisions.
Yeah.
But I got a kick out when we were on a trip a couple months ago. We were driving through Jamestown, and we wanted to take the ferry. And it's the Jamestown, Scotland ferry, and I'm thinking, that's a heck of a ferry if it goes all the way to Scotland. And so my GPS kind of went a little crazy as I drove out onto the pier, because the little red dot started going into the water.
Oh, right.
And then I'm on the ferry, and crossing the sound there, and my car's in the middle of the water. It's pretty cool.
All right. What I love is when you're in one of those little parking lots that are a maze now, like they all are, yeah, and you start to go around and things says, turn left, turn right, turn left, turn right, turn left, turn.
Proceed the route. I give up. Just go back to where you were.
Yeah. Go back home.
And then it says, turn left to go to a street that's behind me now, yeah, and I'm nowhere near it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Bodan from Rochester, New York. What's up, Bodan?
Hey, guys, got a question involving a Flash player that's preloaded into my Microsoft Edge browser in Windows 10. Here's the deal. I wanted to do it. I've noticed it the last couple of weeks that I want to do a speed test with Spectrum, and it says Flash is required and must be enabled to test your internet speed.
Yeah.
And I go, okay. So then I go to the Flash the website to make sure that I got it on my machine, and it says check and see if Flash player is installed on your machine. It says yes, it's pre-installed for Windows 10 Microsoft Edge, but it's disabled, and it says how to enable it. Well, when I go through the steps under settings, advanced, it is enabled, but something's showing up that it's not enabled, and it's on to use Microsoft Flash in Edge. So I use Chrome, I go into Chrome, open that up, and it works fine. So any suggestion on why, even though the setting is on to use Adobe Flash Player in Edge, it says it is, when I check the version, it says your Flash Player is disabled.
Well, it's one of it. It could either be, and you've already checked to see that it's disabled in Edge, but if you also check to see that it's being, that you're not blocking JavaScript or disable the player in Windows itself.
I don't think I did it. At least I did not do it intentionally.
Are you going into the Flash preferences or the Edge preferences?
I'm going to the Edge preferences.
That should be enough. So generally what's happening now is that since Flash has so many security holes and vulnerabilities, that none of the browsers will run Flash unless you specifically say it's okay to run on a website.
Yeah, well, the Edge browser, it's enabled. I went into settings, then I go into advanced settings, view advanced settings, and use Adobe Flash Player. It's on.
Yeah.
So, but again, in Chrome, it works fine to use the Spectrum speed test to test my internet to make sure that I'm getting my money's worth. But in Edge, it's saying it's disabled. So is there somewhere else? Is there like a control panel where maybe it got disabled with an upgrade or something, or an update, I should say?
I know on Safari, there's a site-by-site list as well. You turn off specific sites, so you turn Flash on in general, but you can still turn off specific sites. I don't know.
Would that be in the browser, or would that be in the Flash player?
That would be in the browser to allow a site to use Flash. So having Flash on is the first step, and then allowing a site to use Flash is the next.
Then where would that be? Because I don't see that. So advanced.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Oh, hang on. Choose which sites to open in apps. Could that be open sites and apps?
It could be. You should also check to see if you have installed real Java. You should have a Java control panel.
Well, Java or Flash?
Oh, you're using Flash.
Flash,
not Java, Flash. Yeah. The Spectrum site, when I try to do a test using the Edge browser, says my Flash is not enabled. And then when I go to check it in Edge, it says it is turned on.
So you've got where it says use Adobe Flash Player, it's turned on?
Yes, sir.
I do not have an answer for that. But let me also suggest that since Adobe is now deprecating Flash and they will no longer be supporting it, you try, for a speed test, try speedof.me. Speed of me.
Speed of me?
Speedof.me. It is an HTML5-based test.
Well, I did the other test, so I did SpeedNet.
Yeah, I've also known that speedtest.net has started an HTML5 test also.
Right.
Yeah, this is just, I've been using Spectrum's website to do a speed test, and within the last month or so, I've noticed that I can't do it because it tells me that my Flash is not enabled, and then when I go to check it in the browser, the Edge browser, it is enabled.
Yeah, we've been seeing this for a while, and what we see a lot of people do is they go to Adobe, download, and reinstall Flash again. You go back to the website, and it says you don't have Flash installed. Yes, I do. I just installed it.
Right.
Because the browser is not letting the site know it, because you have to turn on Flash for that website.
Well, again, I thought maybe someone else has brought this question to you, in the Edge browser and stuff like that, but whatever.
You might have to
one final question, off topic. Do you guys ever see people using and running computers that have Windows XP operating systems?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's we do.
And what advice would you give those individuals?
Sledgehammer.
Yeah.
Words of wisdom for Nick, from Nick.
Doorstop.
Yeah. I suggest, first, it is unlikely that you will run Windows 10 with any real alacrity on it, one of those old machines.
Mm-hmm.
So about the only thing you can do with it is run Linux on it, which will run fairly snappily, actually.
Or the Chrome thing,
Neo.
But Chrome is no longer supported. Or Chrome does not. It will not support it on machines that have XP.
No. The Chrome OS.
Yeah, the Chrome OS. Yeah.
Okay.
You can download the Chrome OS, and my brain is not working, and I cannot think of the name of the site.
Neverware.
I just started with an N.
The Chrome thing.
Yeah, the Chrome thing. A company called Neverware, neverware.com.
Anyway, if anybody calls in with the question that I have where Flash isn't working in Microsoft Edge browser, let me know. Put it up on your post or blog or whatever like that, and I'll get an update from you guys if you guys were to follow this up.
Excellent. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you for your time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So I guess we say don't use Flash and don't use Edge. There might be something in the Flash preferences themselves too.
That's what I suggested. If he installed it from Adobe, I kept saying Java, but I meant Flash. If he installed it from Adobe, it is very possible that there is a Flash control panel,
which you usually only see when you're on a Flash enabled page. So you might have to go to Adobe's Flash test page to bring up a Flash page so you can get into your Flash control panel.
Right.
I know there's a way to do it. Let me see if I can find a way to do it manually. But, so Flash, because it has so many vulnerabilities, Adobe has finally said they're going to deprecate it and remove it in 2020, I guess.
Yeah.
Three more years. We have to live with it.
Well, and what's driving that, of course, is sites like the Facebook Games place. They have thousands of Flash games. And,
and Pogo Games is another one. That's a lot of Flash
Pogo's
games.
Pogo's another one, so we'll see a lot of that, I think.
I just went to the Flash Player Help to open the Flash control panel. It says you need to install Flash. I have Flash installed because the video streamer uses it, but I haven't turned it on for Adobe's website.
Right. He may also, and I didn't get to say this, he may have a Flash blocker running in the background.
Yeah,
before the browser started blocking your pages, there were plugins like Click to Flash or Click to Block, where it would block the Flash until you clicked on it to allow it to work.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Paul?
A question about using Windows Explorer search to search my files on my computer.
Yeah.
I'm searching folders that contain saved web pages, and in the search box I put in a proper name that should be in the title of each web page. I get those, but they're interspersed among thousands of files that have been dragged out of the web page folder. Every JPEG, every GIF, so I may have 20 actual HTML files that I would like to see, but I've got them interspersed in thousands of files that don't have my search word in it. In other words, I search for a name, Watson.
Yeah.
I get the web pages with Watson in it, but then I've got a list of 8.jpg, 3.jpg, everything that's in the folder for that web page. How do I eliminate that extra stuff?
Does the folder have the name Watson?
What was that?
Does the folder have the name Watson?
Yeah, well, The folder, you know, let's see, there's the HTML file for the web page. That has Watson in it, and the folder that has all the images and all the
paraphernalia. Right, and often those have the same name. So if you're looking for a file called Walter, there may be the folder that those pictures are in, depending on how you saved it, would be called, like, walter.html images.
You can say, you can change your searching context, so it's not searching the whole hard drive. You can search just
I'm just doing this in the folder that saves the web pages that I save for, like, 2016.
Right. So it's doing what it should. So what you need to do is filter the context. I'm not exactly sure how to do it on Windows. Well, but we'll tell it to do just an HTML file.
Right.
So it won't find a JPEG.
I was looking for that because I saw that on the web where they could tell the file size, but when I have this word Watson in there, the only choices I have, it says add a search filter. One is just date modified and size. Whereas on the examples on the web, when they ask for photo, they got all sorts of file types that they could sift through.
One of the things that I might suggest you search for is asterisk Watson asterisk dot HTML, and that will only bring you up the Watson files. The Watson HTML files.
Right. So if you add the file extension yourself, then it won't find anything without that file extension.
Right.
Ah. That's
so you want the wildcards, which are the asterisks.
Yeah, right. Everything with Watson in it. Yeah, okay, and HTML. Ah, okay, that might do it. I didn't even think of specifying the type of file. Because I noticed even in the HTML folder the folder for the web page, there are HTML files inside of that. Yeah. You know, besides the main one that brings up the page, inside the folder there are other smaller ones that do something. I don't know whatever eBay does with them, but it would bring up those. But your suggestion, right, is to limit it right at the head start here with it.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, that sounds very good.
And were you running Windows 10 or Windows 7?
I refuse to answer on the grounds it will incriminate me.
So XP.
Vista.
Yeah.
There
we got to live dangerously somewhere. We're so protected these days. You got plenty of backups.
All right.
So I can
all right. Thank you very much. That looks like it'll solve my problem.
Yeah,
Go. Good luck.
I'll post a link on how to add the search criteria. So normally when you search, it searches for name and extension and type and everything. You can limit it to search, you know, just name or just extension or just date, and you can combine some of those. So I want a file with this name and this date, and it will reduce the number of hits that it finds when you do a search.
Right.
And that's called a search filter or search criteria. It's a Boolean operation for those of you that are technical enough.
Important to know.
Yeah. All hail Bool. What was his name? George? What was Bool's first name?
Good question.
George. Well, yeah, George
it
Bool.
It is George. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. If you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, I don't know why not. We'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites. And the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported, Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Roger from Irondequoit, New York, on the line. Hi, Roger. What can we do for you?
Okay, Nick, I got a networking problem with a printer.
Okay.
I had some friends, and all of a sudden, their printer just quit. They had printed a large job for their son, and when they went to print again, nothing. It would just spit out blank pages. They gave me a call. I went over to see them, and I changed the cartridges in the printer, and didn't help. The printer still wasn't getting a relay from the computers. They've got 3 laptops, 2 a Dell, a Lenovo, and a Chromebook. So I brought the printer and one of the Dells home, and I uninstalled the printer from the laptop and then reinstalled all the new software for that printer in the laptop, and then I'll use the printer cable to install an update to the firmware on the printer. That, so it would print fine, both with the cable and wirelessly on my system. Took it back to them. Whatever I did would not work on their system, and you're going to love this one. The only thing that it will work with is the Chromebook. The Windows 10 machines, it won't. Pulling my hair out with this one. Got any suggestions?
Okay, well, the way that a Chromebook connects to a printer is through something called Google
Cloud Print.
And consequently, that's going to be a different protocol from whatever you use normally. Uh-huh. Now, there's several different ways that a printer can connect to a... is this wirelessly or wired?
Wirelessly, and all the computers are working fine on the wireless network, so I know it's not their router.
Okay, one thing you might try to do is check to see that the wireless IP address has not changed.
Maybe even rerun the wireless setup wizard in the printer.
Right.
I've done that.
All right.
And I put in the correct wireless address and still getting nothing.
Well, when you say you put in the correct wireless address, you didn't let it pick one. You put it in yourself.
Well, what I did is I used the wireless address that showed up on the printer.
Okay.
And I entered that into the computers.
Oh, yeah, all right. Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Unless that printer doesn't support LPR.
Was it working and then it stopped working?
Right.
I would check all of the settings to make sure that, A, you haven't turned off wireless. B, you're still allowing it to accept connections from your network. C, that there hasn't been some sort of glitch in the software. You might want to check for an update. I know that my brother's printer had an update yesterday.
Well, that's what got it working for me when I brought the one laptop and the printer home, as I updated the firmware on the printer.
Yeah, there were a series of vulnerabilities found in HP firmware that would allow remote exploitation.
Right.
So HP has been pushing updates, but none of the HP printers they looked at had auto-updating turned on. So you have to manually look for firmware and update it.
Right, that's what I did. And the thing that keeps bothering me is it's been, you know, a long-known fact that HP makes the best hardware in the world while writing the worst software.
Copy drivers, yeah. One thing you can try is on the computer, try to ping the IP of the printer.
Right.
And open a command line. Try to ping it and just see if at the very low level the networking actually works before you actually try printing anything.
Okay.
Right, because there's multiple things that have to happen. First, it has to actually be able to connect to the printer at that low level. Then it has to have the right software to talk to that printer. And then it can actually send data. And that software has to actually talk to your word processor or whatever to send the data. Now, most of that is automatic, but if it fails at the lowest level, it can't succeed at any higher level.
Yeah, I've uninstalled and reinstalled the printer in both of the Windows 10 machines.
Yeah, and that often helps as well. Well, uninstall, download a new version, and reinstall, just to make sure you've got the latest driver from the manufacturer.
Well, that's where I go, is I go right to the site. I never use the CD because that's always as old as the machine.
Right, exactly right. Yeah, that's. I'm afraid that's all we can suggest at the moment. This is one of those problems that may require multiple tries over multiple days.
Okay. So, in other words, play around with it a little bit more and then buy an Epson.
There you go.
Yeah.
That would certainly work.
Plug the USB cable in and tell them they have to change the cable every time they want to print.
Right.
I kind of thought it was going to come to that, but I knew that Nick would at least love gloating over the fact that the Chromebook worked.
Yeah, of course it did, and that's important to me.
That means, that's interesting. So the Chromebook works. That means the printer's talking to the internet.
Yep.
We have seen issues. If you have like a guest network in your house, if the printer's on the wrong network, so your computers are on the private network, your printer's on the guest network, the printer can get to the internet, but no one can get to the printer. Because it's on an isolated guest network.
Right.
Make sure you're on the same wireless network.
Okay, well, I'm going to try all that. They told them, you know, I'd be stopping by Sunday afternoon, had the machines up and running and the wine open, and we'll see what happens.
There you go. Good luck.
Okay, thanks for your suggestions, guys.
Yep.
Thank you.
That was a good catch.
We see it sort of the other way. The printer's on the private network, and then your computer will accidentally connect to the guest network because you didn't put a password on it. So the computers like connecting to open networks versus closed networks. And so you connect to the guest network. You get to the internet fine, you get to email fine, get to your web pages fine, but you can't print because you're on a different network.
Right.
Which is sort of the point of the guest network. They can't get to your printers or your files or anything. Just the internet.
But I'm not even going to try to type it today. Our next caller is our friend Joe from
Tawaga, New York.
There you go. What's up?
Well, I've visited a lot of sites that claim, oh, you need to install Flash, or you need to upgrade Flash to version so-and-so, when, in fact, really, they're two lazy JavaScript programmers because they don't realize, hey, at least for that site, I have JavaScript disabled. I'm a NoScript user, so I see that on occasion. As I recall, I also use FlashBlock, and that blocks Flash on a can block Flash on a site-to-site basis. So I don't know if Edge has similar functionality. Your caller might have accidentally told Edge to block Flash from that site, I'm guessing.
Yeah, well, that's the issue that we're having is how do you do that? I mean, the choices are buried down a ways.
Oh, yeah. Tough to find, tough to diagnose.
Yeah, so he had Flash on in general, but somewhere there might be a allow-specific website change, and none of us have Edge here, so we couldn't find it.
Or to deny specific websites.
Yeah.
Right.
Could be. Without seeing the machine, it's kind of hard.
Right. That's the problem with some of these things. When they're that esoteric, there's 50 things you can check, but, you know, you can't over the phone. That's hard to do.
All right. Needs to be made a rule. Before you call in, you have to have VNC installed so you can see what's going on.
Yeah, that's not happening. Yeah.
Something like that. I'm sorry. I guess I'm a little prejudiced. I'd say about Edge, just say no. It's like, if Chrome works, use Chrome.
Yep. Well, that's exactly right.
But then it becomes an intellectual annoyance. Why doesn't it work? I have to figure it out.
Right.
That's true.
It would kind of drive me nuts from a theoretical standpoint.
Yeah.
Why does this not work?
Right, but at that point, it becomes something you can play around with in your spare time as opposed to, I have to solve this so I can get something done.
I see the caller's point, too, because you go tell Spectrum, my speeds are slow. What's the first thing they're going to tell you? Well, run our speed test. And I understand their standpoint. It's like, they have total control over their network, so they want to see what's going on from their network to you.
Right.
And, you know, you go to someplace like speedtest.net, and they say, they're going to say, our interconnect with so-and-so is filled up right now. That's why you're getting slow speeds. Which is kind of a poor excuse in the first place, but nonetheless, something they
just pegged the speed
say.
Meter.
I in particular like the DSLReports.com speed test. It has one feature of it which will tell you if you have buffer bloat.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is people thought as RAM got cheap, you increase the buffer size in routers so that you don't drop packets. Unfortunately, the way TCP works, that's one of the worst things you can do, because if a packet is simply delayed a long time, the algorithm thinks, that got through. Great, we'll go on. We'll soldier on just like we've been doing for the past 50 minutes or whatever. Whereas if it would have been dropped, TCP would say, we need to slow down. Let's not send things so fast. So it screws up that algorithm, and that's what buffer bloat has done. It has made things seem slow when they're not really that slow. It's just because stuff is buffered up instead of being sent right through or dropped, it screws up that algorithm. Thankfully, routers have been updated to take this into account, and software has been updated so that this is less of a problem, but it still remains somewhat of a problem on the Internet in general.
Right.
Well, I just thought I'd try and help your caller along.
Yep.
That's all I got for this week. Thank you for your time, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir. Have fun.
And the new Top Gear America started last week, and the new host is Bill Fichtner, character actor. He's been in a zillion things. So when I look him up, he grew up in Cheektowaga.
Yep.
Went to Maryville High School, graduated from SUNY Brockport.
Yeah, all right,
yep. Cool. And he was the bad guy in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and among a zillion other movies he's been in. He's one of those guys, he's been in so many things, you can't name any of them.
Right.
But when you see his face, oh, yeah, I know him.
Right. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
I think this is going to be a quick one from you guys. You're so good with Google. Google Calendars from a desktop, laptop, whatever you want to call it. The default is an all-day event. I've looked at 47. You do all day. Is there any way to change that default so I don't have to click it every time I put an entry in?
Yeah, it should be in settings. I have my default set to an hour.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, I was in settings. I don't know where to find that.
Settings. Default event duration, like the fifth or sixth item down.
Yeah.
Hold on. I'm in settings right now, and I still don't see.
Language, country, time zone, date, time, notification, default event duration.
On the left.
All right, okay. Well, that says 60 minutes. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when you create an event, the first you have to uncheck the all-day function to get the time. Is that
That's what the default event time should be. You create an event, it creates it at your default time.
Right. Okay. I don't think I'm making myself clear enough here. When I click on an event, it's the thing that comes up underneath it is all day. And
I know what you're saying.
You have to turn that off to get the times.
But when you make a new event, it will default to your default event duration.
When you click on, how do you start an event? How do you create a new event?
I double-click the calendar day.
That's why. When you click at the top, it assumes you want an all-day event. If you want an event that starts at 1 o'clock, click in 1 o'clock.
Okay. When the calendar is up, I've just got a calendar with the dates on it. There's, empty square if there's nothing scheduled.
You're in month view?
Yes.
Yeah, he's in month view. He's got to go to day view.
Yeah, go to day view.
Oh, okay. I like month view. I never even considered day view. Okay, I will try that. Or live with what I got, because I really like month view.
Well, I understand that. I do.
All right, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, good luck. All right, that music tells us that you have wasted another hour of your life, 2 hours of your life today, as a matter of fact, listening to this nonsense. We appreciate it. Please, all those of you to whom we did not get, I apologize. Please call again earlier next week. When the phones light up at the end of the day, we can't get to everybody. But I do want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. Or maybe I want to thank half of Steve Ray today. I'm Nick Francesco. We will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites, the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. And we will see each and every one of you in just 166 hours. Thank you so much for listening.